And I had my watch on, and I showed him from 12 to 12 could be from midnight to noon to midnight. I tried to explain, but he did not understand what I was saying. And I couldn't. Don't know, doctor, but he did understand English. Betty, yes. So then he asked me, well, what did we eat? And I said, we ate meat, potatoes, vegetables, milk. And so he asked me, what are vegetables? And I said that this is a broad term and could cover a great variety of certain kinds of foods we eat. But I couldn't just explain what vegetables are, there were too many. And he said was the one kind I liked. I said that I ate a great many, but my favorite is squash. So he said, tell me about squash. So I said that it was yellow, usually, in color. And he said, what is yellow? So I said, well, I will show, 175, you. And one started looking around the room, and I couldn't find anything yellow at all. And I wasn't wearing anything yellow. I told him I couldn't show him what the color was, but it was a bright color, something like we consider sunlight yellow. And there was no sense talking about vegetables, because I couldn't explain what I meant. And oh, I said, I don't know how to do this. I can't tell you where the earth is on the map, I don't know. All these things you ask me, I am a very limited person when trying to talk to you. But there are other people in this country who are not like me. They would be most happy to talk with him, and they could answer all his questions. And maybe, but, if he could come back, all his questions would have answers. If I did, I wouldn't know where to meet him. And he laughed, and said, don't worry, if we decide to come back, we will be able to find you all right. We always find those we want to. And I said, well, now what do you mean by that remark? And he just laughed. And then Biani is coming. They are bringing Biani out. I hear the men out in the corridor. And I said, Barney's coming. And he said, yes, you can go back to the car now. And I got the book, and Biani is coming up and his eyes are still shut. She laughs again. He missed an awful jot. I wonder if they are making him keep his eyes closed. And so it is time to go back to the car, and the leader said, come on, we will walk back to the car with you. So I said, all right, but, I do wish I really knew if you were going to come back. And he said, we will see. She pauses a moment, then, and we are see out in the corridor. Barney is behind me, with his eyes shut and a man on each side of him. And I am all ready to go down the ramp when some of the other men, not the leader but some of the men, are talking. I don't know what they are saying, but they are see very excited. And then the leader comes over and takes my book. And I say, oh hell, I'm furious. She is very intense, Armas T crying. And I said, why, oh, you promised that Lee 6, I could have book. And he said, I can now it, but the others object. You it, I said, THISIS my proof. And he said, that is the whole point. They don't want you to know what has happened. They want you to forget all about it. Now she speaks as if talking to the leader. I won't forget about it. You can take the book, but you can never, never, never make me forget. I'll remember it if it is the last thing I do. And he laughs, and says, maybe you will remember, I don't know. If you do, because Barney won't. Barney won't remember a single thing. And if you should remember anything at all, he is going to remember it differently from you. And all you are going to do is get each other so confused you will not know what to do. If you do remember, it would be better if you forgot it anyway. But I hope you don't. And it won't do you any good, again on the verge of crying. And I said, why? Are you trying to threaten me? Because you can't scare me, because I won't forget. I will remember it somehow. And then he said, all right now, let's get back to the car. And I was standing there by the side of the ramp, and I'm not so mad now. They have taken Barney ahead, while we were talking. I said, I do wish I could have some proof of this, because it is the most unbelievable thing that ever happened. We were walking, and the path just a short distance. It doesn't seem as long as it did going in. Going in seemed awfully long. And he said, I am going to leave you here. Why don't you stand by the side of the car and watch us leave? So I said, all right. I would like that. If we are not in danger from it. He said, no, you will be far enough away from it. And he said he was sorry that I was badly frightened in the beginning. And I said, well, this has been a new experience, and I didn't know what was happening. But I certainly wasn't afraid now. It has been an amazing experience, and I don't know, maybe I would forget it. And I hoped that somehow we would meet again. Maybe he would come back, and there would be people who could answer his questions. And he said, well, he would try. And then they all turned around and started to go back. And I get up to the car, and Barney is inside. I open the car door, and I say, come on out and watch them leave. Barney is still in the fog, but his eyes are open, and he is acting more normally now. Dulcie is sitting on the seat where I sit, so I felt Dulcie, and she is trembling all over. I pick Dulcie off the seat, and I'm patting her, and I say, don't be afraid, Dulcie. There's nothing, 177, to be afraid of. I am leaning against the fender of the car, and Barney comes out and stands beside me. And we are going to watch them leave. Dulcie won't look, she is still shaking. And it starts glowing, it is getting brighter and brighter. Doctor, what is getting brighter? Betty, the object. Doctor, this is the object you saw in the sky before? Betty, yes. Only now it is a large ball, a big orange ball, and it is glowing, glowing, rolling just like a ball. Later, Barney and Betty were to recall this as what they felt was the huge moon that appeared to them to be on the ground. Now it does and goes down, and there is a dip, and then zoom, it keeps going away farther and farther. And, I say, well, Barney, there, the go, and we are none the worse for the experience. Let's get in the car and head back to Portsmouth. And he goes around and gets in his side, and he is driving. Back scat, so, I get in the other side. I put Dulcie over in there, on the floor, and pat her on the head and tell her she is a go-odie dog. And Barney starts the car, and we start to ride. And I am just, happy, and I said, well, Barney, now try to tell me that you don't be live in flying saucers. And Barney said, oh, don't be ridiculous. And I think he is joking. But then all of a sudden we get this beep 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 on the trunk of the car again. Doctor, Rice is there, second time you are see, getting the beep? Betty, yes. And I said, well, I guess that is their farewell L. Theyr off, whe river they are cgoing. And I don't, no, it is just so far n-t-a-s-t-i-c-i, you posk, we, should forge t all about it. LLS, doctor, what did you say to each other now? Betty, well, when Barney said, don't be ridiculous, I don't know whether he is kidding me or not. So I don't say anything. And he says, so, I know he is conscious of this, he said, look and see if you can see it around anymore. How can he look out and see something around, if he's going to deny its existence? So, I do. I look around, and every once in a while, all the way home, I keep looking for it. And I keep wondering, have they gone? How far away have they gone? But I still have the feeling that they are very close. I keep looking for them. I look through the binoculars. Another long pause, then, outside of Concord, north of Concord, we did not stop, but we slowed down very, very slowly, and I was watching with the binoculars, and I didn't see them again. But I kept looking all the way home. We kept riding along, and I said, we won't believe it, no one will. What the heck, let's forget about the whole thing. It is too fantastic. People will think we are crazy. I mean, just to talk about flying saucers. People will think you know way out. but this is so much more than seeing something go through the sky. I think I wanted to forget about it. I might as well. What could I do about it? But I wonder in the kitchen at home. If they ever will come back. I go around looking for them. And I look out the window. Betty repeats the details about Amvank home in daylight, unpacking, taking a tub and going to bed exhausted. Then, Doctor, your memory is sharp now. Did you at some time tell Barney about your experience? About being in the vehicle? Betty, number Doctor, and he didn't speak to you about being in the vehicle? Betty, I can't remember any time he mentioned being inside of it. 179, Doctor, well, go on. Betty, I'm puzzled now as to why we didn't talk about it. Months later, after the therapy was over, the Hills summarized their thoughts on this question by comparing it to their hypnosis sessions, where they had no memory whatever about what they said, until they were instructed to remember by the doctor. Because you would assume that we would. Self. We just said, well, it is an amazing experience, and that is all doctor. I don't understand it, my I said. You had two experiences, you say. One of having sighted this thing and seeing the recognizable people. The other experience of being in the vehicle. The say were two different experiences. Betty, but to me, well, the first one was so small. Actually, all I did was to see it flying through the air and over the front of the car. And you know, I didn't get too much of a look at it. The other part was so overwhelming in comparison. Doctor, why would you want to keep it a secret? Betty, because I wanted to please the leader, because he told me to forget about it. Doctor, you wanted to please the leader? Betty, he told me to forget about it. This had been Thyrdecision, Doctor. Dot, why did you want to please this leader so much? Dietti, I don't know. 180, Doctor. Then you might wonder why Barney didn't talk about it. Do you think he wanted to please the leader? Betty, maybe. Because I am quite sure that he was well, his eyes were closed. But I think he had some consciousness of it, of what was going on. Doctor, what had they done to him? Betty, they had done something that made him keep his eyes shut. And they had to help him along, walking out to the object. And before we left, they were guiding him somewhat. But I think he was walking mostly under his own power. She pauses again. Doctor, yes, go on. Betty, maybe it was the fear of remembering it, too. It was something about the way he said it was better to forget it. Almost like a threat. And then I think maybe I wanted to forget it myself. I don't know. Was going to say I wanted to forget it myself, but that sounds like a rationalization. Because I really don't know if I wanted to forget. I just couldn't remember it. I can remember parts, but I couldn't remember other parts. It seems to be the part between the beepings. Again, after the therapy, in talking to the writer when their conscious minds were allowed to review all the data revealed on the recordings of the sessions, the Hills concluded that the original series of beepings seemed to put them in a trance-like state, which later became deeper on encountering the roadblock. The second series of beepings seem to restore them to consciousness, although they recall remaining in a dazed condition most of the way home to Portsmouth. 181, Betty, it's very hard to understand. There seems to be the part between Indian Head and where we were stopped on the road. The part where I felt it should be forgotten. Doctor, why should it be forgotten? Betty, I don't know. But there was this beep in the beginning, and then I didn't remember anything. I remember somehow Barney turning off the main road, until we saw the men standing there in the road. Doctor, how could you see? Did they have lights? Betty, could see the shapes. I could see, you know, when you're driving at along at night, and there's a group or something in the highway, and your headlights on, they show up. We couldn't get by. But I don't remember anything from then up to that time. I don't know how far we rode, or anything. Something must have happened in between in that period. Even if I was just looking at scenery. Doctor, 1, pursuing the dream possibility. Did you stop to sleep? Betty, to sleep? No, I don't think so. I mean, I think I would know if we did. One don't have any knowledge of what happened until we saw the men in the road. And then all this happened. Yet we saw the men. Then there was the beeping again. I know I wanted to forget about it. Doctor, when you Arnie took Dklsi out of the car before all this, were you worried? D. Etty, I wasn't worried. THEN. I was watching out for other cars coming along the road. 182, Doctor, could you have gone to sleep in the car when Barney was out with the dog? Betty, number Doctor, what about when Barney walked away from you, and you stayed in the car? Betty, oh, this was when the object was over us, when Barney was walking away from the car towards it. Doctor, did you go to sleep when he was out there? Betty, number Doctor, all right. Now, the next morning, you wished you had a Geiger counter. What happened then? Betty repeats in detail the long story of seeing the shiny spots on the car, calling the P's Air Force Base, watching the compass needle react to the shiny spots, calling her sister. She recalls that when she waxed the car sometime later, the spots did not disappear, but actually became shinier. She recounts how she wrote Nick up in Washington in her desire to find out everything she could about the subject of UFOs. At the conclusion of the story, the doctor closed her portion of the session and brings Barney in to check his experiences against some of the material Betty had given him. Doctor, after he puts Barney in a trance. Betty, of course, has been dismissed at this point. Now Barney, I want to review with you a few points of your experience when you were apparently taken aboard this unidentified object. You, 183, are back now. You are comfortable and relaxed. But you are back when you were in the road. Tell me about these men. Barney, in his usual monotone. It is important to remember that neither Barney nor Betty is aware of either his own or the other's story. We're coming down the road, and they're waving to me. Doctor, waving to you? Barney, yes. Their hands were not up, but down. In a motion that indicated for me to stop. He later described it as a sideways, swinging motion. Doctor, was there a vehicle there? Barney, no, there was no vehicle. Doctor, what light was there? Headlights? Barney, it was just an orange light. Doctor, an orange light? Barney, car, and I could see this orange glow. And I started to get out of my and put one foot on the ground. And two men were standing beside me, helping me out. And I felt very relaxed, yet very frightened. Doctor, did they identify themselves in any way? Barney, number, they didn't say anything. Doctor, did they indicate what they wanted? I'll say, Barney, they didn't say anything. And I knew I was walking, or moving down the road from the position of where my car was parked. And I could see the ramp that I went up. And I closed my eyes. Doctor, where was this ramp going? Barney, to a doorway. A doorway of a very, very funny shape. Like a doorway into a very strange looking craft. And I stepped inside. And I heard a voice, just like the voice I heard on the highway back at Indian Head, telling me that no harm would come to me. And I keep my eyes closed. Doctor, you didn't actually hear it at that time? Barney, that was what I couldn't understand. Doctor, why, I thought the leader in the vehicle was talking to you? Barney, yes. Doctor, that was the voice you thought you heard? Barney, yes. Doctor, you didn't actually hear it, then? Barney, that was what I couldn't understand. Doctor, you think it was transmitted to you, or something? Barney, yes. I went down this corridor, just a few steps, and into another door. 185, Doctor, they were leading you? Barney, they were holding me on both sides. And I went in. And I thought my foot stumbled over a bulkhead right at the base of the door. Doctor, was Betty around? Barney, no. Betty wasn't with me. And I saw this table, and knew get on this table. Doctor, I would go over to it. I was carried. Walked over to it. And I just knew I was too. What did this table look like? An operating table? Examining table? Barney, it looked like an operating table. Doctor, an operating table. What is the difference between an operating table and an examining table? Barney, or an examining table? I don't know. I just knew that I could be supported fully on it. And it was very plain. Nothing elaborate. Just that I could lie on it. And my feet extended out from the bottom of it, overlapped it from the position I was lying in. And I felt my shoes being removed. And I could hear a humming sound that they seemed to be making. I was very afraid to open my eyes. I had been told not to open my eyes, and it would be over with quickly. And I could feel them examining me with their hands. They looked at my back, and I could feel them touching my skin right down my back. As if they were counting my spinal column. And I felt something touch right at the base of my spine, like a finger pushing. A single linger. Doctor, did they speak at all to you? Barney, I could only hear this low, humming sort of sound. 186, he demonstrates it. It sounds like mmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmmm mouth was opened, and I could feel two fingers pulling it back. And then I heard as if some more men came in. And I could feel them rustling around on the left side of the table I was lying on. And something scratched very lightly, like a stick, against my left arm. And then these men left. And I was left with what I thought were three men. But the two who bad brought me in and the other one who seemed to follow these two men, there were more than one person in the room. But only one man seemed to be moving around my body all the time. Then my shoes were put back on, and I stepped down. And I think I felt very good because I knew it was over. And again, I was led to the door where my feet kicked against this thing at the very bottom of the door, like a high door jam. And I stepped over it and went back toward the ramp. And I went down and opened my eyes and kept walking. And I saw my car, and the lights were out. And it was sitting down the road and very dark. And I couldn't understand. I bad not turned off the lights. And I opened the door and felt for Dulcie and got in. And I sat on the tire wrench, and I took it, removed it from the seat and put it on the floor. And Betty was coming down the road, and she came around and opened the door. Doctor, was she alone? Barney, she was alone. And she was grinning. And I thought at that time she must have made a road stop in the woods. And she got into the car, and said, well, no one will believe this. Or I might have said it, because I said, no, no one. This is so ridiculous. No one will believe it. And, I was thinking what bad happened and that we were sitting there, looking down the road, and I could see this glow get brighter and brighter. And we said, oh, my God, not again. And away it went. And then I put on the lights and started the car up and drove silently down the road. And I thought I must have driven 20 miles, and I came back to Route 3. Doctor, what did you say to Betty? 187, Barney, Betty said to me, well, do you believe in flying saucers? And I said, oh, Betty, don't be ridiculous. Doctor, did you tell her about your experience in this vehicle? Barney, I had forgotten the experience. Both Betty and Barney maintained under the stiffest questioning that their memories for these experiences were immediately wiped out after they left the vehicle. Until the hypnosis restored them. Doctor, you had forgotten. Barney, yes. Doctor, did she tell you about her experience? Barney, no. She did not. Doctor, then neither of you spoke about your experiences in the vehicle? Barney, number doctor, 1/he is fully aware that they have consciously claimed that they had no memory of their joint experience, but he is continuing to test under hypnosis. Why, not? Barney, one didn't remember it. Doctor, see. This memory had just been wiped out? Do you think that she had seen the vehicle? 188, Barney, I didn't know. Doctor, and you don't know it today? Barney, number doctor, all right, then. We'll stop there. Dr. Simon woke Barney from his trance, and the session was terminated for the day. Out of it had come the confirmation that Betty's recall under hypnosis paralleled her dreams almost exactly. Dr. Simon did not know at the time that Barney, because he was embarrassed about Betty's dreams and wouldn't consider their basis in reality, had persuaded Betty not to talk out her dreams with the doctor until he asked about them. Betty had agreed not to bring them up until she was asked, in order not to unduly influence the doctor. He was to explore the dreams later as the therapy progressed, along with other aspects of the puzzling case that had to be re-examined. First, there was the nature of the experience. What was real? What was not? Barney might have certain anxieties on a trip away from home because of his racial sensitivity. Certain fears might be exaggerated under these conditions, making Barney excessively sensitive. The question marks were obvious. How could two people describe similarly a complex phenomenon in detail, both in the conscious state and under deep hypnosis? How could they recount remarkably similar details of an abduction by humanoid intelligent beings which defied any encounter documented in history, when neither was aware of what the other had seen or reported under hypnosis to the doctor? Did this or did this not happen? If a person were a believer that hypnosis is absolute, that the individual under hypnosis cannot produce anything but the truth, and if both the Hills were fully under hypnosis, then he would believe their story. The weight of authoritative evidence indicates that in hypnosis what the subject believes determines what is truth to him. Consequently, the truth of the Hills' experience was determined by the strength, 189, of their conviction. Where the likelihood of lying is slim, the possibility of reporting a fantasy, fully believed by the subject as true, was a possibility. The probability of two similar fantasies, reported by two different people, is slight. What is the answer? The story at this point could be assessed from two polar points of view: the Hills were lying or the experience was true. An outright lie on one agent and the truth on the other. But what about in between? One possibility, hallucinations. A person may have a temporary hallucination in a period of extreme fear. In spectrum form, the possibilities at this stage might be considered as follows. 1. The incident was a compilee lie. Dr. Simon did not accept this possibility. He felt the Hills were sincere, credible people, telling what they believed to be the truth both consciously and in the trance state. 2. The incident was a dual hallucination. The doctor also felt this was improbable. Throughout the sessions, there were no indications of this. 3. The incident was a dream or illusion. This would be explored in detail as a possibility, that an actual experience had taken place on a sensitized background. A background existed on which could be imprinted illusions or fantasies, later to be re-experienced in dreams. 4. The incident was, a reality the abduction took place. This type of experience had never been documented reliably with any convincing evidence. The doctor believed this to be too improbable, and much material was similar to dream material. Sighting of UFOs, in the light of reports from scientists, Air Force personnel, airline pilots, and radar men all over the world remained a distant and CT possibility, if not a probability. Further, the HILLSHONESTY seemed sure. They corroborated each other's story both consciously and under hypnosis. By subsubstantialingoutlying and hallucinating, the doctor began to weigh the evidence of illusory elaboration, especially an examination of the dreams involved. Bttydid have dreams. Elaborate dreams. Dreams that were repeated in detail under hypnosis. The doctor had examined in Barney's session whether he, too, fell asleep on the road and dreamed the abductionis, the conscious. 190, Shin. Barney was convinced that he did not fall asleep on the trip, and the doctor was willing to accept this. After the first sessions with Barney, Dr. Simon began to assume that the illusions and fantasies were his and that Betty had absorbed them from him. But in the following sessions, Betty, under hypnosis, confirmed Barney's experiences to a remarkably close degree. This might have been conscious collusion. But here were two people, neither aware of what he was saying, who were telling identical stories, which the Hills weren't permitted to know until later.